Welcome to the Cult That Arcana podcast. We are recording once again after a month-long absence. My name is Zach, your host. My co-host this evening will be...
Nick.
Nick, it's great to have you back on the show.
Oh, yeah.
A little John Polly riff there, nicely done. And the film that we're going to talk about this evening is... Go. From the year in 1999, which was a very strong year for film. Possibly the best year for films of the past 20 years, I would say, would be 1999.
It was definitely a big release year, that's for sure.
Great year in film that year. Go, directed by Doug Liman, a man who directed Swingers. This is his directorial follow-up to Swingers, and who would go on to direct some big action movies, actually. He directed Mr. and Mrs. Smith, the Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie film. I believe, was that around the time when Brangelina entered the popular lexicon?
Probably. I know that was the film that allegedly broke up Jennifer Aniston and Brad Pitt, This director's a home wrecker.
He directed The Bourne Identity, a film that I've actually never seen in its entirety, but I've never seen any of the Bourne films, but I'm told that they're all very strong films. Then he also, for some reason, directed Jumper from 2008, which is just a very, very, very bad film. Hayden Christensen, Sam Jackson, and Jamie Bell, if I recall correctly. Jamie Bell being the young man who starred in Billy Elliot, which is a very good film. This film was also written by John August, who actually became a very prominent screenwriter in the past few years. He wrote the screenplay for a few collaborations he did with Tim Burton, Corpse Bride being one of those, and Charlie and the Chocolate Factory being another one. But so he's become very prominent in the past few years as Tim Burton's movies now seem to all gross like $500 kajillion. But he's also a producer as well, and I don't mind John August's scripts whatsoever at all. I think he's a very solid script writer. He's got a very solid filmography. But Go is from 1999. It is an ensemble piece. When this movie first came out, I wanted to see it real bad. I was a big fan of some of the actors in it. I know that there aren't a lot of Jay Moore fans out there, but for some reason, Jay Moore I've always found to be kind of charming and endearing. But,
I really like Jay Moore. I think he's great.
Oh, good. Thank you. I'm glad that somebody sees eye to eye with me on that.
He usually plays the same character in every single film, but, you know, he's always fun to watch.
He was in a great TV show that came out.
Action, right?
Yeah, yes, yes.
Yeah, I loved that show when it was, on for, the 3 weeks it was on.
It was a very underrated show. A lot of times you'll see it tops lists of, TV shows canceled too soon, things like
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
But also stars Sarah Polley. In the past few years, she's become really critically acclaimed for making films. But also stars Timothy Oliphant, who has become very ubiquitous in the past few years. He stars on the FX show about the cowboy who's also a police cop.
Which I'm sure is a good show, but the way you described it there sounds so bad.
I haven't actually seen it, but my brother watches it, and he says that it's great. But he was in A Perfect Getaway, where he was absolutely fantastic in that film, which I find highly underrated. And he's been in a couple other things as well. He was in the remake of The Crazies, which was a lot better than it has any right to be. But he Justified is the name of that show, where he plays a cowboy police cop. He's been in a lot of films over the past few years, as well as various other actors, William Fichtner, Scott Wolfe, Katie Holmes.
Basically a dumping ground for 90 has-been actors.
Yeah, there's a lot of people who, if you were on a Fox teen drama in the 90s, or if you appeared on the WB, now known as the CW, I think, chances are you ended up at least in the background of a scene in this film. But when this film came out, there was every reason to hate it whatsoever. It came out in the wake of Pulp Fiction. Pulp Fiction had been released a few years earlier, and it aped that style. It aped Pulp Fiction's style, and it was kind of it's pretty much Pulp Fiction Jr., Pulp Fiction Light in a lot of ways. It tells a disjointed tale. It's not told in chronological order, and it shows things from the perspective of various different people. What I'm trying to say is that there were a lot of reasons why this movie should not have worked, but I really feel strongly that it does work. I really think it's really funny and that it's really exciting in a lot of areas, and I like this film a lot. Nick, your thoughts?
Yeah, I didn't think of this Pulp Fiction connection until you just mentioned it there. I would say the only comparison with Pulp Fiction is the just the style, how they have like the different plot lines. But I think the plot lines in this movie in Go are way more interconnected than the ones in Pulp Fiction. But that's a debate for the internet forums. But no, I really enjoyed this film. I like the style. When I started watching it, I knew nothing about it. I think you're the one who suggested that I should watch it, because about a couple months ago I wanted some films to watch just to kill time, because I didn't feel like doing like homework. I'm a good student, and this was one of the films, so I just threw it on my Netflix queue and it came in and I started watching it, and didn't know what to expect from it. That's all I got for right now.
Well, we should talk a little bit about the plot of the film. There are several interconnecting plot points. Sarah Polley and Katie Holmes play young friends. They're like young 20-somethings living in the Los Angeles area and working in a grocery store. They've moved out there like a lot of maybe like young models or young actors do, and they've kind of holed up together until something better comes along. Sarah Polley ends up getting herself involved with a police officer played by William Fichtner and two young men played by Jay Moore and Scott Wolf, who try to basically get her to sell them drugs in a sting operation so that they can arrest her and then find out where she got the drugs from and then arrest that guy. That guy is played by Timothy Oliphant, who is, I think pretty much steals the show in this film.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Timothy Oliphant and Sarah Polley, their common friend, a young Englishman by the name of Desmond, his real life name Desmond Askew, his name in the film Simon Baines. He goes on a wild trip to Las Vegas with a couple of his friends, specifically his best friend Marcus Taye Diggs. He goes on a road trip to Las Vegas with Taye Diggs, who plays a character named Marcus, and a few other guys, including Breckin Meyer, character actor journeyman Breckin Meyer,
Yeah.
and James Duval, who has a small but memorable role in Independence Day. But it's a wild ride. Actually, I think the Las Vegas scenes are probably my favorite parts of the movie, as these guys.
Totally, totally agree with you on that one. The Vegas storyline, I was rolling in my chair with every scene, with everything that happened. I thought it was hilarious.
It goes from totally like, kind of like boring type road, typical road trip, to completely insane in the span of about 20 minutes. As these guys seemingly do every single thing wrong and get themselves into all kinds of trouble all throughout Las Vegas, culminates in a car chase scene, which is very well done for being such a low budget movie, involving character actor J.E. Freeman playing the proprietor of a strip club and his young dumb son as they chase them through the busy streets of Las Vegas. Again, very well directed. You can kind of see the grounds being laid here for Doug Liman to direct the big budget action films that he would become known for in the later part of his career.
I agree. I think that as I mentioned earlier, I think the Vegas parts are probably my favorite. The story opens with, as it's called, Rana's story. And I guess that's where she's like trying to sell drugs because she needed to get money back from a supplier because she lost the original drugs because she was being cornered in by cops. I gotta say that the first 20 to 30 minutes, which is the first story of the three or four stories that this movie carries, I didn't care much for. It was a little too dark for me, which I don't mind darkness, but I didn't expect the movie to like go that dark, especially when spoiler alert, Rana gets like hit by the car and like left in the ditch. And I was like, oh, this movie's going in a direction I was not expecting it to go. And then like it completely shifts gears into like a screwball comedy. My appreciation for the movie just like it shot up. Like I got a renewed interest in it.
We should also note that the film takes place on Christmas Eve, which I think is just kind of genius. And with the fact that the Christmas rave going on in the background, there's like a big green monster-looking guy with a Santa Claus suit on as a decoration in the rave that's going on. And when sometimes people ask me what my favorite Christmas film is, I say it's a tie between Die Hard and Go, and they just kind of look at me like those aren't Christmas movies, but when in essence they actually really seriously are.
Yeah. Well, I think Die Hard, at least in recent years, has become more and more considered to be a Christmas movie, more ironically than anything else.
Right.
But yeah, go, because it's still kind of an obscure, a cult film, if you would. Not many people like that movie springs to their minds.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons why I wanted to talk about this movie with you, Nick, is because I know that you hadn't seen it. I saw it when it first came out, and it was really a part of my... I saw it, you know, like when I was, you know, 16, 17. It was really a part of the formative years of film for me. So this film really played a role in shaping the kind of movies that I would like that I would watch as an adult. To me, there is no worst part of this film because I like this film a lot. It's just very.
With your view on that, like for me, my least favorite part is that first segment, mm-hmm. just because it's like very, very serious and. Not a lot of laughs, but the other two are pretty much comedic in its way. I see what you're saying. Like that story is it's very disconnected to the other two, where the other two are more intertwined with one another. Mm-hmm. This one is kind of its own separate thing.
But I do like this, some of the scenes with Jay Moore, Scott Wolf, and William Fichtner, like when they're sitting outside of the grocery store and they're about to go in there and they're trying to get Simon, but Simon's not there, so they're going to try and get Rana instead. Mm-hmm. And they're talking about like, oh, how did you know that your girlfriend was cheating on you? And it's funny because Scott Wolf and Jay Moore are together, they're a gay couple in the film, but Fichtner doesn't know that. So they're kind of they're saying things like, well, there was a pair of socks that weren't mine in the drawer, and it's funny because these guys are giving away little secrets about each other, and trying it is like an episode of The Office or something. You're right about that.
The interplay during that scene was very, very good. I like it when they find Ronnie's body and they're like just flipping out about what to do.
Mm-hmm. Because they're in way over their heads. What happens basically to them is they get caught with some drugs, probably a little bit of pot or something. And because they're supposed to be celebrities within the universe that Go has set up, they star on like a daytime soap opera. The police have worked out a deal with them. It's like if you go and find out who sold the drugs to this person, we will let you off the hook. So that's what they're out there doing, and they feel kind of very dirty for doing this type of work, but they pretty much have to do it in order to get off clean without being arrested or charged with possession or whatever. So that's the whole point of their story. Their story to me kind of ends somewhat climactically though, or unclimactically though.
But yeah, but like their story just kind of like they get kind of dropped from the movie when we go back to the Katie Holmes, Sarah Polley storyline.
Right. Which I like the way that it's all tied together with the strip club owners tracking down the drug dealer because it was his credit card that was used, and they go into his house, and the drug dealer completely sells out his best friend or his good friend Simon, going so far as to draw them a map and offer them the best possible route to get to his apartment, and then he shows up. He's like. We need to go down to Mexico and hide out for a couple of weeks or something. It's good stuff.
I also like just at the end there, and they work out a deal. Like you shot like my son, so we're gonna shoot you. And he was like completely fine with it.
Yeah.
It's like no, I'm fine with it. It's okay.
And part of that scene always bothered me because the caliber of gun that those guys were using would have completely blown that guy's arm off.
It's a movie. You just have to go with it.
I'm okay. That's a good shot. That's a good. There's a lot of humor in this movie. A lot of dark humor in this movie as well.
I also like. This is a gag that it's been done. I'm glad it's a gag that's not overdone. But it's one of my favorite gags when they do it in a movie, where like something happens at the beginning. Like they stash a character somewhere and they say, "Oh, hide here. We'll come back for you." And you completely, the audience and the characters completely forget about him until, like, the tail end. It's like, oh, no, we gotta go get him, which happens in one of Katie Holmes' friends who's, like, who took, what was it, LSD or something?
It was ecstasy.
Ecstasy.
Yeah.
And he's, like, just flipping out. And, of course, they're being chased by the drug dealer at the beginning of the movie. And because he's, like, tripping, they need to stash him somewhere, so... Because they're slowing him down, so they stash him like behind like a wall or something.
Behind like
that.
a few pieces of sheet metal or something.
And for the rest of the movie, like the characters and we, the audience, completely forget about them. And even, like, the character, Sarah Polley's character, is in the hospital, presumably for a day or two. Katie Holmes, they go back to work, probably it's a day after Christmas, and they realize, wait, where's our friend?
Like, the whole shift had gone by and everything, and yeah. Before they finally go looking for him. Yeah, he had taken two very potent hits of ecstasy and was completely tripped out of his mind. So the implication being that he spent like 36 hours in an alley behind a couple pieces of sheet metal, just like...
I mean, it's such an easy, cheap gag, but it's one of those things that anytime a movie or a TV show does it, I just think it's the one of the most hilarious things that's ever written, but that's just me.
No, I like it a lot as well. I think it is very, very funny. It was a very well-reviewed film when it came out, too, which kind of surprises me in a way. I mean, I like the film a lot. I think it's a quality film. Pretty much everybody that I know that has seen it likes it a lot, too. It garnered so little attention when it was released. It's almost kind of funny to go back and look at some of the reviews and see how positive and how glowing they are. And if you look at on Rotten Tomatoes, it has like a 92% fresh rating, which actually kind of puts a little hope into humanity for me, honestly, but not really.
I think there's a reason why this film got good reviews but got lost in the shuffle, so to speak. For one, it was kind of like an independent film that starred some relatively known actors, and generally those films I've noticed have a trend to be well reviewed. They always tend to get like pretty decent reviews. But on the flip side, this movie was a little bit offbeat, and also it was released in April of 1999, which meant it came out like right around the same time of The Matrix, the first Mummy movie, and Star Wars Episode I. Three huge films that just dominated late spring, early summer.
All released within like 6 weeks of each other.
Yeah, exactly. A film like this, I could really see it being lost in the shuffle.
That's a really good point. I do know a lot of people that have seen this that I know like this film a lot. It's an enjoyable film. It's a very fun ride. It's one of those films where you can put it in, you can watch the whole thing, and you almost feel like you've been on a roller coaster ride in a lot of ways, because it never really slows down to the point of a crawl at any point. The closest it comes to that is the dinner scenes with Jay Moore, Scott Wolf. That's the closest it comes to ever being to ever slowing down. But I mean, the tagline of the film is "Life begins at 3 a.m." You know, it's a roller coaster ride of a film. It's called Go.
Yeah, dare I say this movie keeps going.
It's a movie that I own on DVD. It was one of the first DVDs that I actually bought. Probably released on DVD around the time that I got my first player, which was a PlayStation 2. Jeez, I can't believe that was like 10 years ago.
I know. That's crazy. I know. We were seniors in high school 10 years ago, Zach. How creepy is that?
That's really nuts, man. That is kind of scary in a way. And I've done nothing with my life.
I've read comic books. Life well spent.
Anything else to say about Doug Liman's Go, Nick?
I think everything that's said has to be said.
But yeah, Go, very solid film. Very Pulp Fiction-esque in a lot of ways, while still keeping a very lighter side and some humor as well. It's kind of, in a way, it's kind of like three movies in one, three very solid movies which come together to form a very solid film overall.
Yeah, I totally agree with you on that.
So Nick and I it would be safe to say that we recommend this film. Check it out on Netflix. So for my co-host,
Nick,
I am your host, Zach, saying check out our blog at cultentercanon.blogspot.com. Feel free to subscribe to us on iTunes, fan us on Facebook. Check out the other various projects we're working on. I recently have appeared on Paul Chapman's Greatest Movie Ever podcast, where I should say that I really feel like I did not do a very admirable job. So hopefully the next time that I get a chance to work with Paul, I'll be a bit more comfortable in my interaction and be able to do a little bit better of a job. But I will put up a link to that when it is available. So Nick, thanks for being a part of the podcast.
No problem, Zach. Thanks for having me.
All right, and we thank you out there for listening to us. And I have not yet... I'm just going to start over. It's terrible.